The Attack Zone, Episode 16, Deadpool. Hello there, Dice fans. You have once again stepped into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you topics that we choose to put forward so we can share our strengths for one another's improvement and bring attention to our weaknesses so we can learn to address them. I am Dave, and joining me on the line once again is semi-professional Spider-Punk cosplayer, Randy. Hello there, Randy. Good to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back, buddy.
What's going on?
Man, I have watched so much wrestling this past weekend. It was insane. There was...
Yeah, big thing, right? Like Goldberg versus somebody else?
Yeah, Brock Lesnar. It was, you know, hyped to be a great match, and it ended up... I mean, spoiler alert. It ended up being a two-minute squash match. Goldberg hit him with, like, four moves, pinned him clean in the middle of the ring. It was very unexpected. It was... I mean, a heck of a weekend all the way around for wrestling, and that was just the coup de grace.
So I know nothing about this, but what I heard somebody who purports to know a lot about this talking about it, and they said that basically that's the only way it could have gone. Goldberg is better in short spurts, and if it's close, it's not as good, and people don't come back for the next one. And if Lesnar wins, then it ends the feud. Is any of that accurate?
Kind of. What's swirling around the rumor mill behind the curtain is that Lesnar realizes that there's a little more money to be had in having a couple of matches with Goldberg, and so he was fine with dropping this one in Goldberg's big return in exchange for maybe winning the war later down the line.
Interesting.
Yeah, lately Brock Lesnar's character has been very unbeatable, and so now that... You know, he took Goldberg lightly, and Goldberg shocked the world and pinned him. You know, next time he won't be taking him lightly. Next time he'll be more prepared, and people will be, you know, might tune in. Oh, what's going to happen now that he's not taking him lightly? Is it? Are we going to have a repeat, or is Lesnar going to go back to his old dominant form? It's definitely the long play.
Hashtag every podcast, wrestling podcast.
That's right.
I have been enjoying a brand new subscription to Marvel Unlimited. This is really new for me because, as you know, and maybe some of the listeners know, listeners, I can say that word, I promise, guys and gals. I am pretty much like a DC guy. I have never, other than a couple of trade paperbacks before today, I'd never really read a Marvel comic book. But now I have a couple issues of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl under my belt, and I'll tell you what, I'm loving it.
That's awesome. I mean, I've heard great things about the comic. That's one I never quite dove into.
The art is definitely different. It's a more... I mean, obviously, it's Squirrel Girl. It's a little more lighthearted and such. But it's very funny, and the wit is so strong that I can overlook the more casual... art style. I mean, it's definitely something they're going for. It's not that it's bad art. It's just that it's a specific kind of style. It's just like, you know, they didn't have to do Dexter's Laboratory and the kind of animation that they did, but they did it because that's what they were going for, and it's a similar sort of thing. Not that it looks like Dexter's Lab by any means, but it's a simpler kind of look. But yeah, it's enjoyable. I'm liking it so far. I'm down with Dorian Green.
That's great. If you finish up Squirrel Girl and want some other suggestions, I've got plenty for you, buddy.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of your suggestions are going to be Spider-Man, and Spider-Man as a hero is fine, but like a couple of the trades that I do have are very Spider-centric. I have the Origins of Venom, which kind of goes through everything, getting the costume, the symbiote costume, and all that all the way through. And then I also have Maximum Carnage, which is my favorite event comic, except for maybe 52.
Yeah.
And I hate the constant internal Spidey monologue that you get. And I understand why it's there. I get that it has to be that way because it's just him, and you're going to get his thoughts. But this, like, constant, I'm swinging around web to web, and I'm thinking things, or I'm fighting somebody, and I'm reacting to things mentally. Like, in more words than anybody actually thinks. I don't know. I know I've just alienated every Spider-Man fan, including perhaps yourself.
Well, you have, but I know you're going to think this is a Spider-Man comic when I tell you the name of it, but it's not, I promise you. It's a 17-issue run called The Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Okay.
And Spider-Man actually only makes, you know, a semi-appearance in the first and last issues, and it revolves around Spider-Man villains Boomerang, the Shocker, Speed Demon, and a few others. And it is hilarious. It has made me laugh out loud, blow my mind, witty, just, it is phenomenal.
I found issue number one right now, and I'll add it to my library.
Yeah, it's, over the past couple years, that is the comic that I have recommended to people. Like, if you're going to read one comic, read The Superior Foes of Spider-Man. It is it.
Right. I'll give it a look. I mean, I don't want to go through all of Squirrel Girl, but I gotta say, so far, I'm loving this Marvel Unlimited thing. I'm not, like, being paid by them, though. That'd be nice, guys. If you want to pay me, please do. This is pretty awesome. I mean, if I read just a couple comic books a month, it really evens out, because what I found is, from when I was buying books, now they just sit there, and I have nothing to do with them. I mean, some of the trades I'll read again, but I lose track of the issues, they take up a lot of space, and all that kind of stuff, so I actually don't mind doing the subscription service where I don't get to own anything. I'm cool with this.
Yeah, I'd consider doing it, I just feel like I might not be able to take full advantage of it. I'd subscribe, mm-hmm. and... you know, maybe once a month I'd sit down for half an hour and read a couple of books.
You could benefit, I think, is you could sit down and read some of it to your kids.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially with the flow view, I can't remember what it's called, where it kind of goes from, like, not just panel to panel, but, like, action piece to action piece. It's a really neat way of navigating the comic.
Okay. Well, and that's another thing I was going to say. If I ever go ahead and get a tablet instead of just a mm-hmm. smartphone... maybe being able to look at it on a tablet would be beneficial as well. I mean, a smartphone's great. I love my smartphone.
Sure.
I am very, very lucky to be able to have a smartphone. But it's just not the best for trying to take advantage of that kind of app.
Right. I'll tell you what, that basic Fire tablet, yeah, it's going to have offers on it, and it's not the greatest, but it's fine for reading the Kindle Fire.
Yeah.
Like, usually 50 bucks I've seen loaded with, but it's going to be loaded with the advertisements when it's asleep or when you're like wake up from sleep.
Hmm.
But cheap tablet that works for basic purposes. Yeah, there you go. Again, not paid by Amazon though. If you want to pay me, please, Jeff Bezos, do it.
So we're
all right. You're not here to. What's that?
I was going to say we're filling out your Black Friday. You know, must buy purchases for the holiday season, the new app, and get your you know, loved ones a subscription to Marvel Unlimited.
That's exactly what it is. All right, you're not here to hear us talk about this, though certainly we all have interest in comics or we wouldn't be playing Dice Masters. But we're going to talk about Deadpool today. We have a Deadpool set release that just happened, so of course we have a Deadpool 6-pack. I do want to remind everybody first, if you like the show, please give us a review on iTunes, Google Play, wherever else you get your fine podcasts. We're listed on all those directories, so reviews help others find it. It helps get the word out. We don't advertise. It's all word of mouth, and we want to give you props for a review here. We have nothing new to this point, but we have so many positive reviews that you folks have left previously, and we want to give you a shout-out on the show. So, if you like us, leave a review. If you don't like us, leave a review too, and we'll listen and try and see where we can improve and so forth. We've had a couple of iffy reviews here and there, and we've tried to take criticism to heart and change things and all that stuff, especially in the early days of the Reserve Pool podcast. That happened a couple times, and it did help us grow and develop that show. So we want to hear from you. If you want to just get in touch, of course, mailbag@thereservepool.com. Just let us know that it's going to the attack zone there. We also need to thank everybody again for the Patreon support. Good, healthy amount of you helped us get to that goal every month now. So as long as you stay in anyway, the 6-pack is alive and well. I see we have a couple of new subscribers that will be coming in for December. And we'll be giving away some stuff just a little later in this show to one lucky patron. All right, with all of that out of the way, Randy, we got a Deadpool 6-pack here. Now, you have had the opportunity to draft this set, correct?
I did, last Wednesday for the grand release date.
So tell us about that experience. I mean, first off, forget about the games, because I know you have a whole other story there. But like, just as you were passing around the cards, what did you see? What were your impressions experiencing the draft aspect of it?
I mean, just kind of analyzing the characters as they were coming around. There weren't a lot of instant, you know, big flashy win conditions. Some characters with some decent stats, but a lot of those characters with decent stats also had some higher fielding costs. I do know that while we were passing stuff around, one of our players told us, just so you guys know, I'm going to imagine that Agent X is the tiger on the card instead of the guy. So that was... I mean, that was really the highlight of the draft. It's Uh-oh. A fun... I know, it's a fun set in, you know, some other ways. Like, I see some cards like, oh, this could do well in Unlimited, and this could do well in Unlimited. I just don't think this is the strongest draft set that we've seen.
Yeah, I will say I have not drafted it yet. But as I look through things in prep for the draft, I feel like I'm going to be in a situation where there are even fewer choices that I am confident in making than I did Amazing Spider-Man draft, which was difficult outside of a couple of cards that comboed well. So I'm a little uncertain here. I'll be going in blind not only to this draft but this six pack, because I haven't had the chance to really digest this set. I've had a couple papers due and I'm writing another one for next week, and crazy. So haven't had the time to digest this set the way I'd like. But sometimes you do go into a draft blind. How much of these spoilers had you absorbed before you went into the draft on Wednesday, Randy?
Not many. I know. Okay. I listened to some other like pre-draft analysis to some others that did dive into the spoilers a little more, and then there were a few lucky folks that were able to kind of do some pre-release drafting on Tuesday night. I know some stores do that. And I kind of ignored the advice that I was hearing from a lot of those people. Everyone was saying take direct, when it comes time to choosing your basic actions, you got to choose some direct damage or some removal, because there's just not in this set.
Yeah, and that's the limited look I have had at that. I hadn't heard people talk about that. Limited look that I've had at the set, I think that's the conclusion I would draw as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and maybe I was just being a little arrogant, maybe I was trying to be cute, but I went with, we didn't restrict our basic actions. I went with Big Entrance and Resurrection, so I figured I'd be able to get some of my, you know, maybe more expensive characters cheap, get them in my bag, get those characters out faster, and be able to take advantage, be aggressive, and kind of win that way. And I had a lot of synergy through the Inhumans, the common Black Bolt, Medusa, and Lockjaw. I had all of those, and, you know, the Black Bolt, when he's fielded, he can give another Inhuman +3 attack. Medusa has Deadly, and Lockjaw, you know, keeps a little bit of pressure on, potentially dealing 2 damage to all the opposing characters. I thought that I would, you know, have some synergy there, be able to beef up Medusa and Lockjaw if needed, and, you know, keep the pressure on. But all it took was, you know, a couple of sidekicks to keep my characters at bay. I was swinging with good attack power often, but it just none of it was getting through. And it, I mean, the game I played, it ended up being a 20-20 deadlock after, you know, 5 turns after the time had been called. I mean, neither of us could just get through the other's wall because no one brought direct damage. It was, it was rough.
Yeah, that's the typical draft cautionary tale, but usually it's about drafting it or not. But in this set, there just doesn't seem to be a ton of it there. And really the removal that's in this set is sort of in the form of that deadly mechanism, and you don't get to have a lot of control over how that works. Plus, that's going to be after blockers are declared and all that. So it doesn't really help you the way that you'd like.
Right, and I mean, the globals that you could use in conjunction with Deadly to clear the board, you know, either a force block or a taunt, mm-hmm. you don't have access to with basic actions.
No, you don't.
So you can't even bring those globals to the table with this set. You really need to take advantage of some basic actions. Even if you're just doing, you know, Marvel only, because this is a Marvel set, in the form of, you know, Power Bolt or Betrayal, something like that, I think it's definitely needed.
Yeah, I completely agree. Maybe even if you're not unlimited, I've seen Villainous Pact bought and used to some effect in some of those wall games.
Yeah.
You know, choosing the one thing that can't block. Now, obviously, you're going to have a healthy amount of villains in any draft, so you gotta watch if that's actually going to be useful for you. But, you know, it's tough.
Another one with the lack of globals, your opponent, you know, probably won't be holding on to a whole lot of energy, so Cloud Kill could come in very handy here as well.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. That's very true. I think that's going to be what you have to prepare to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. Let's go into this draft, the six-pack here. We do have a few more foils and a rare here, so we'll be adding that to the kitty for the Patreon backer that we'll talk about at the end of the show. But let's start this out. We have a six-fist X-Man, Colossus, Rigid Morals. He has Back for More, which is... and when he does that, that's when he rolls from the prep area. Like, when he starts a turn in your prep area and you roll him. This is, by the way, I want to point out with Back for More, this is one case especially where you do not want to use the reminder text. If you only look at the reminder text, you might think about in the rule book where it says that all dice are technically rolled from the prep area, but the actual ability is specifically saying that the die begins the turn in your prep area. So anyway, back to Colossus. With Back for More, he deals 1 damage to all character dice and players. He fields 1-1-2, his stats go 5-5, 6-6, and 7-7. This is the closest I've seen to direct damage, but he's pretty expensive.
Yeah, with very limited, you know, methods of ramp in this set, man, mm-hmm. 6 energy is hard to get on a single turn unless you're bringing basic action specifically to get that extra energy.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with Gorilla Grodd in being a 7 cost in Green Arrow Flash, but then that set also brought you things like Draconis Chalkboard and Star Labs and
yeah.
so forth. To help you ramp that energy. And that's, I think 6 costs are going to be a difficult play in Deadpool Draft.
Now, that said, I think this card is probably the closest thing, aside from maybe a super rare or two, the closest thing to a win condition card.
Mm-hmm. Because I agree. He's a bomb.
If you can buy him and, you know, get in a situation where you can use Resurrection to get him into your prep area before your next turn. I mean, he clears all opposing sidekicks, and, you know, you get him on a character face, you can swing in for some big damage.
Yeah, it's just going to be difficult to do that because you're not going to have any real bag management ability that you might be used to having, and that's going to be the difficult part there.
Yeah.
You know, in Green Arrow Flash, again, you can kind of use Star Labs with Resurrection, almost like a ring res thing, though an expensive one. Here you have no such ability. Still, he's absolutely a bomb. He has the potential to shift the board the way that you want to shift. I don't know that I would first pick him, but he's our first card, so we got none better right now.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Next up, we have the 4-shield Hydra member, Madam Hydra Viper. When Madam Hydra damages an opponent, move target die from that opponent's prep area to their bag. And her fielding cost goes 0-1-1. Her stats are 2-1, 3-2, and 4-2. So I like this because you do commonly see Resurrection and or Villainous Pact brought in.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't field for a whole lot, but when damages an opponent... That's going to be a little bit more difficult. I don't know that you can rely on triggering this ability a whole lot.
Yeah, I would... I would honestly think she'd be much more useful if her attack and defenses were flipped all the way across the board. Because then your opponent would be more likely to say, you know what, I'm just taking one or two damage. Let's get her off the board. As opposed to two, three, or four attack. Because then it's a no-brainer. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to block her. I don't want her to damage me.
Sure.
And she is handy for getting rid of a character that would trigger a back for sec, a back for more ability.
But, absolutely, she is.
I mean,
how reliable is that going to be?
Right. I don't think that's going to be reliable enough in this set.
Nor do I. All right. Next up, we have the Four-Fist Spider-Man family character, Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099. When Miguel O'Hara KOs a character die with combat damage, send the KO'd character die to its owner's bag. His fielding cost goes 1-1-2, and his stats are 4-2, 5-3, and 5-5. That ability sounds more like a drawback than a benefit, and I don't think his cost really says that he's pushed stat-wise. Like, I think I would want him to attack for, like, at least one more on all faces. That's not a big... That doesn't benefit anybody. That probably benefits your opponent more, rather.
Well, it may prohibit them from chump-blocking him with a single sidekick. So if they do just want to throw that single sidekick in there in front of him to get, to block, they're not getting the extra die in their prep. That extra sidekick is watering down their bag.
That's true,
so I see him in that sense. I don't think four cost is... I don't think he does enough for four cost.
You know, thinking about it, though... If you give him Overcrush, Hulk out on this guy could be kind of interesting.
Because
then he might garner a couple of blockers. You might be able to knock more than one thing out and send it to the bag. At least it certainly presents some questions as to how you would do this. Like anger issues or Hulk out. I wonder if there's some something to be done with that. Because
yeah.
His stats aren't bad.
No, a minimum of four attack. That's respectable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, yeah, obviously you count on the blocks to send things to your bag, to prep, and you hopefully get to roll some stuff, but I don't know. It's not a useful enough effect that it necessarily benefits anybody, and I don't know. I mean...
And if your opponent has a sweet when fielded ability, then you don't even want to attack with him to put him in the bag to give him another chance to do that.
Sure. Or what if it's a multiple man swarm?
Yeah.
Right? I think that multiple man has swarm on, is it every face? Or every rarity? I know it's not just the super rare.
No, I think the common and the super rare, I think there's one that doesn't have swarm.
Yeah. So...
But yeah, that's a prime example.
That's dangerous too, unless that's the only one that was in the field. But
yeah.
If I have multiple men, that's weird.
Multiple,
stuck in
multiple,
the field,
multiple,
I'm happy.
Men.
Yeah, I'm happy to block with one of them and maybe get it knocked out. Though his stats are pretty good too, so it's hard to say. All right, so
I think
still Colossus.
Yeah, I think I'd still go with Colossus here.
Yeah. Let's move on then to the 3-bolt X-Man Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Foresight. While Negasonic Teenage Warhead is active, when your opponent targets one of your character dice with a global ability, spin each of your Negasonic Teenage Warhead character dice in the field zone to level 3. Boy, like, he needs a nickname, because that is just a lot of words to say. He fields for 0-1-1, and his stats are 1-2, 3-3, and then 6-3. You can get a lot of stats here, but your opponent's got to target one of your things first. What are you going to see there? There's not a ton of globals in this set, if I recall correctly.
No, there is one global on the common motorcycle.
That's it. Yeah. And does it even target characters?
It does target a character.
It does target a character? Okay.
You can remove a target blocked attacker from the field.
That's right.
But it has to be blocked, for you to do anything. Again, this is another card in this set that is totally dependent on what basic actions you want to bring. I mean, maybe something like, you know, transfer power or a magic missile. I mean, those might be really good with this. Things that your opponent would be likely to use. But
it seems like a lot to give your opponent. If you're going to bring that, you're hoping that it's something that your opponent wants to use. And
right.
then you're going to bring that and say, use this. Here's something that might be advantageous to you. I just don't know. I love his level 3 stats. I mean, 163 is pretty ridiculous, especially on a 3-cost character. But I think he kind of has... Some people saw, like Giant Man and stuff like that as a problem, right? Like, yeah, the really low stats and the kind of medium and then, like, super crazy stats.
Yeah.
But some people liked him. But his abilities made him worth it. I don't think this ability makes him worth it.
By the way, Negasonic Teenage Warhead is a girl.
I can't even tell.
It's
okay,
a she.
Yeah. Oh, no, I do see, so this artwork is... I mean, I see certain anatomical features now. This artwork is weird, and I have no idea what anything is in it. I see a face that's just kind of floating there, and it looks bloody, but I assume that's not blood. I don't know. Not the greatest art. she needs a nickname, because that's a lot of words. Moving on.
We'll think of a nickname.
Moving on. The 3-shield Deadpool family character, Kidpool, Earth 10,330. If you have an active Deadpool-affiliated character die other than Kidpool, Kidpool gets +2 attack. And his stats go 0-1-1 to field, rather. And his attack and defense, 1-4, 3-4, and 4-4. You're likely to see, I would say, some Deadpool-affiliated characters in this set, right?
Yeah. My opponent used, in the draft I played, my opponent used this to... Pretty good effect.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot worse cards you could draft first. I don't know if it merits picking number one overall unless you have maybe another Deadpool character that gets a buff in your second pack.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's one of the Bob Agent of Hydra characters that gets a bonus. I want to say he gives all other active Deadpool characters +1 attack. So, like, the two of those would combo really well together.
Sure, sure. I mean, yeah, you take him from 1-3-4 to being, what, 3-5-6,
mm-hmm.
which is something for a not very expensive character. And obviously, with a set being Deadpool, you're going to see some Deadpool stuff. He's not bad. I mean, I don't think he's a bomb the way that Colossus could be, but... The drawback to Colossus is how easily are you going to purchase him?
Yeah.
And so right now I'm sitting him aside with Colossus, but I don't say that one or the other is necessarily ahead. But he at least gives me an idea for something to do, whereas with Colossus I'm hoping to buy him and that he does enough. Probably by the time I buy him and get him out, my opponent has a pretty beefy field that dealing one damage to everything is not going to matter a whole lot. So... moving on, then, Dogpool. He is a 4-fist Deadpool-affiliated character from Earth 20,110. All these Earths, I'll tell you what. When fielded, deal 1 damage to target opposing character die, and on the burst phase, which is just his level 2 phase, also spin target Deadpool character die up 1 level. He fields for 0-1-2. His stats go 4-2, 4-4, and 5-4. And he doesn't really impress me that much.
No. Nope, I would take both Kidpool and Colossus over him, so.
Yeah, I mean, the 1 damage doesn't get you a whole lot. The fact that you might be spending 2 to do that, I mean, doesn't excite me. And you might spin up something if it's level 2. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
There's still 2 more commons. We have Phantomex. The 4-shield X-Man, Misdirection, is the subtitle. When fielded, you may spin down target opposing non-Hydra character die. If you do, the Phantomex character die you fielded gets +1/+1. And his stats go... he fields for 1-1-2, and he is a 3-3, 4-4, and then 5-5 on level 3.
I mean, okay, so Phantom X gets plus 1 attack, plus 1 defense. So that would make him a 4-4, 5-5, or a 6-6. He can still be chump blocked. He doesn't have Overcrush.
Yeah, I mean, you get that benefit. You want to be able to use that right away, or it does nothing for you. It only affects the Phantom X die that you just fielded.
Yeah.
So I don't see what it actually gets you if you can't use him right away. And it's just too hard to curate your roles in a way that you would be able to use him right away. I say pass, pass, pass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless somebody's taking it just because they lack a four-cost character and really want one, I can see that being one of the characters in like the last couple of picks from a pack. He doesn't impress me.
Nope. I completely agree. Right.
Next up, we have a 4-mask Inhuman Black Bolt. When fielded, target character die you control gets plus 2 attack. If that character die is an Inhuman, it gets plus 3 attack instead. And I just realized his subtitle, I didn't see it at first, so I almost skipped it, but it's just dot, dot, dot. His subtitle is an ellipsis. So, hooray. he fields for 0-1-2, and his stats go 3-2, 3-3, and 5-4. This gives you a buff when fielded, and that's not bad. And even if I'm fielding him on level 3, I'm getting at least 2 stats out of it for 2, so that's okay.
Yeah.
And then if it's an Inhuman, I'm getting plus 3, though I think there's only a couple of other Inhumans in the set.
Yeah.
I don't hate this.
No. I built my team around him when I drafted. And if you take some Overcrush basic actions, I think he could be dandy.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to get him and, you know, Hulk out or, you know, Anger Issues, the basic action to grant Overcrush on the same turn so that you can give Overcrush to presumably whatever you give the bonus to.
Right.
Excuse me for a second while I step on a soapbox. Black Bolt is the king of the Inhumans. If you look at some of the feats that he's accomplished over the years in Marvel Comics, it is insulting to have him be a 3-2 character on level 1. Absolutely insulting. He's gone toe-to-toe with the Hulk, the Thing, you know, a mere whisper from him can crumble mountains. And he has 3 attack on level 1. He tops out at a 5 attack? This character is poorly misrepresented.
Hey, you're talking to a fan of Booster Gold who is protecting the timeline as we know it, and the buffoonery is merely a facade, and was completely disrespected on every single rarity. So you don't have to talk to me about a character getting the crap end of the stick.
Yeah.
But he gives stats.
He does, as a good king should, empowering his people.
Sure. Do you put him over Kidpool?
No, mainly because I played with him and realized that he's not going to win me the game.
Right.
If you
see, Kidpool doesn't necessarily either. I still think Colossus is at the top, but he's too darn hard to buy, yeah. And I don't love it yet.
If you see enough Inhumans, especially if you can get Black Bolt or Lockjaw, which are the only other Inhumans in the set, in your other group of 6, okay, now you have something you can target with the plus 3 attack. Now, maybe now we're cooking with gas. Mm-hmm. But on an island, I don't think I can put him over Colossus, even with the 6 cost.
Sure. Okay, so we end the commons here with Colossus at the top. So let's move into the uncommons here. By the way, that Black Bolt was, in fact, a foil. So hooray for a Patreon backer.
Ooh.
We have the Three-Fist Shield character, Agent Carter, combat trained. While Agent Carter is active, no sidekick character die may attack if it is the only character die assigned to attack. Her stats are 0-0-1 to field, and then 1-3-2-4 and 3-4 for her attack and defense. That's kind of an odd ability.
That is a nonsense ability. Because who? No one ever attacks with a single sidekick.
Well, yes, they do. Well, they attack with a single sidekick if it's stuck in the field and they want to see if you'll KO it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done that multiple times, and sometimes they let it through and fine, at least it's not stuck in the field. Especially if I'm running low on other dice. If they knock it out, then great. Sometimes they'll knock it out with their own sidekick, and at least I get to roll something, even if I'm giving it to them too.
So this keeps a player from doing that, but they can still attack with two sidekicks.
Yes, that's really dumb.
Yeah,
it's really stupid. I am not taking her for an ability. If anything, I might take her because she's relatively cheap. But even so, Kid Pool is just as cheap. But Fields for one more on one of his faces, it doesn't excite me at all.
No. Nope. Yeah. Not picking her.
Nope. All right, next up is Black Bolt. Let it all out. This is a 5-mask inhuman at uncommon here. When fielded, all inhuman character dice you control gain fast. And we already covered his stats. Does this entice you a little bit more?
Well, he's 5 cost, and that's pricey. However, the common, I'm not too familiar with that. I believe it's the common Medusa, has deadly. And that Medusa can block up to 2 character dice. So if you give that Medusa deadly, that Medusa that has deadly fast, that's a great combination.
Well, unfortunately, if that's when blocked, this is a when fielded ability. So is it when blocked or is it as a blocker? Maybe I misheard you.
You know what? I believe it's when she blocks. So if he's
okay,
when
so that
fielded,
wouldn't even help us.
It wouldn't help. Yeah. No. Mm.
No.
Never mind.
I don't think he give. I think he's an interesting card. I don't think in draft he gives you anything that that really benefits you. Fast is nice.
Well,
maybe he's the linchpin on a specific turn.
Concept. It's a great concept with this set because there are so many Deadpool-affiliated characters that have deadly. But he only gives fast to Inhumans.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't like
it. Nope. Me neither. I would love to see the Inhumans become a thing. Maybe people will make the Inhumans a thing, even just having a couple of them. Sometimes there's enough combo in there to be a basis for something. Not always, but sometimes. We haven't seen it yet with the Guardians of the Galaxy, though I'm sure somebody's working on it. But
we have top men working on it.
Yes, we do. Yes. Finally, at Uncommon, we have a 5-bolt character here, unaffiliated. First unaffiliated character of this 6-pack so far.
Oh, wow.
This is X-23, Trigger Scent. If an opponent has 2 or more dice in their prep area, X-23 costs 1 less to purchase. She fields for 1, 2, 3, and her stats go 4-2, 5-3, or 7-4.
Another good character that you need Overcrush for.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And 2 dice in prep, I mean, I guess depending on what you knocked, it depends on either too much of what your opponent did. Actually, that's it, or if global, no, it depends entirely on what your opponent did. Because by the time you can knock out things, unless you're doing it on your main step, you can't buy things anymore. So what does she really do?
No, I mean, I guess if you bring a basic action, you know, maybe like Cone of Cold or Fireball or something that can knock out multiple characters, then you can take advantage of it. But then you're using an action die that could come up 2 energy to get an effect to save 1 energy. Eh.
Yeah.
I do like the stats.
And even if you just hard buy her, the fielding cost is a little bit prohibitive.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the stats, but man, for one more, I could add a Colossus. I mean, his back for more ability is difficult to trigger in this set, but I don't know. I'd still rather have him over everything we've seen so far.
Yeah, it's not that I really love... I have to agree with you, and it's not because I love the Colossus, but it's because everything that we've seen has been, how does this help me? We haven't really had any ramp. Mm-hmm. We haven't had any other bombs. We haven't had any kind of removal.
Right, and for a lot of these other characters, we've said, well, if you give it Ogre for Overcrush, maybe you can... Well, the same can be said for Colossus. If you give him Overcrush, then you're... Yeah.
Well, yeah, and plus, if you give him... If he triggers back for more ability, and then you actually manage to field on that turn, well, his Overcrush, it might do just a little bit more because everything has taken one damage. Of course, your stuff has taken damage, too, so that could also... hurt you.
Right, but if you clear out your opponent's sidekicks, now all of a sudden maybe they're forced to block with something that they didn't really want to block with before, and I mean, forcing those tough decisions on your opponent's always a nice perk.
Absolutely, and that's something we've talked about many times. Alright, finally, at rare, we have the Three-Fist Deadpool-affiliated character Dogpool Bark. When a single Dogpool character, or am I supposed to go Dogpool?
I think so.
When a single Dogpool character is the only blocking character die, that character die gains deadly. And he, we already talked about his stats. 4-2-4-4-5-4 field 0-1-2.
I don't love the ability because your opponent could just simply attack with multiple characters, and all of a sudden he doesn't. He doesn't have deadly if you want to block everything. However, those stats for a 3 cost aren't awful. I mean, level 1 fields for 0 and having 4 attack on a 3 cost character. And if your opponent does have the Colossus that deals 1 damage to everything, he has 2 defense on level 1, so he would survive that.
Right.
It's not a bad pick.
But not as a first pick. Or are you arguing for him as a first pick? Just on the stats?
Not just on the stat, but because there is synergy amongst other Deadpool-affiliated characters, there are, the Hydra Bob I mentioned before, there's the Kidpool that we saw in this earlier on in this six-pack. There are ways to get the Deadpool affiliation to work.
That's a fair point.
If I know for a fact that I can do something to benefit having multiple Deadpool affiliated characters in my other six pack, I may pick this Dogpool over Colossus.
So let me ask you this: would you pick it over Kidpool? Who is going to who also costs 3, is also Deadpool affiliated, but almost matches and exceeds on level 2 and 3 the stats of Dogpool if you have that other Deadpool affiliated die in play. Like, if you're going Deadpool strategy, why wouldn't you take Kidpool instead of Dogpool? Haha. You have stepped into my web or something.
Or something, correct. Ew, I day is stepped in Dave's something.
Well, let's not go there, please.
Dog pool. Anyways.
I could see going Kidpool just because of the assumed difficulty in taking care of anything with the Colossus. Like, I don't know, he's an interesting card, but I don't know that he gets you a lot by the time you get him. I would rather have the speed. If I'm faced with this pack, unless my second pack has like nothing usefully Deadpool in it, I'm probably gonna pick Kidpool and just see what happens. Like, it's not a great pack, and maybe other people aren't going to have a great pack either. I mean, certainly we've heard enough of this draft that it is a tough draft. I think Kidpool has got to be the pick. I mean, pretty much for the same argument that you just made about Dogpool, but Kidpool's probably better, and he fields for one less. I mean, Kidpool does the same thing for you as long as there's another thing out there that's Deadpool affiliated.
Yeah, I think I would go Dogpool for these reasons. One, he's the rare. Pick the rare. It's harder to get to fill out your collection. Two, okay, you could essentially buy either of them on your first turn, even if you're going first and only drawing three dice. Mm-hmm. Which one would you rather have hit the field first? Dogpool.
Well, you see,
Dogpool,
well,
the character,
not necessarily.
The character that has Deadly when he blocks by himself and already has the decent stats, or Kidpool, the character that needs something else to have decent stats.
Or let me put it to you this way though, Dogpool, who has just two defense on level one, right, versus Kidpool has four defense on all of their faces. Like, Dogpool is more offensively skewed, but if you're going to get Kidpool out early, at least he can. I know he's a useful blocker on all three faces, and then I get something else, Deadpool out, and there we go. Perhaps even a different Dogpool from a different pack, though it probably wouldn't be the rare.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we could probably go round and round on this one. I see what you're saying with Dogpool, but I don't know. Chances are, how much does the Deadly matter? If my opponent's only going to attack with one thing and I'm only going to block with Dogpool, isn't it likely that I'm going to be knocking out whatever that is anyway?
Hmm. Indeed.
And am I really going to want to attack with him for any reason? And he doesn't even have Deadly when he attacks, so that's actually a moot point.
Right.
I don't know. I think Kidpool is going to be the better pick, and then you go Colossus. If you're convinced, based on your packs, that you're somehow going to ramp up to it, I think you probably have to give Colossus a look. But I'm going to look at Kidpool just because he at least helps me in multiple phases of the game, whereas Colossus probably only helps me late. Kidpool helps me early. He can defend, and with another affiliated character, he can help on the attack.
If this six-pack was open to all basic actions, I would seriously consider going Shocking Grasp and a basic action that could grant Overcrush. Shocking Grasp to deal damage, to knock out my own sidekick and ramp that way to be able to buy Colossus, and then maybe Hulk out, just because it's the cheapest of the Overcrush basic actions. Maybe something a little more expensive, I don't know.
That's a fair point. I think that's a point well taken. If I'm going to pick Colossus, then I'm going Shocking Grasp ramp with an Overcrush basic action counterpart. And interestingly, both of those would be just two cost basic actions.
Right.
So you have to watch what your opponent's doing there too. But not everyone uses Shocking Grasp well. And that's certainly a viable thing. So perhaps Colossus, perhaps Kidpool. But perhaps this draft is not easy.
Yeah. I mean, heck, do you just go, Kidpool and say, I'm taking Betrayal and Power Bolt, and I'm going to just buy my basic actions?
Probably. Probably. All right, so that's the six-pack. Not an easy one, and we'd like to hear from you about Deadpool draft and what you're finding with all of this kind of stuff. Have you been faced with a lot of packs like the one that we just had? We want to hear about it. So now here at the end of the six pack, we need to do our November drawing, because this will be our last show in the month of November. We'll start in December soon. You can check things out at patreon.com/theattackzone if you want to. But basically the way this is going to work is, as long as you were a subscriber and your money came in for the beginning of November, then you'll be eligible in that month. If you subscribe during November, then you'll be eligible once Patreon charges you in December, and so forth and so on. So we're going to pull up the random number generator here, and we're going to figure out who is winning some foils and some rares. So let me just get this going, and the winner in Hollywood is Rob Myers. Rob, we're going to send you an email, but if you hear this before we email you, or I somehow forgot to email you, send me one, mailbag@thereservepool.com, and we'll verify, because we have your email thanks to Patreon as well. So thank you, Rob, for backing us, and you win some foils and some rares, really from a couple of different sets here now. And we look forward to sending that to you. So we'll exchange some information and make sure that those awesome cards get out to you. Thank you once again so much for your support.
Woohoo! Congrats, Rob Myers.
Yay! Yeah, Rob. All right, so before we go, in a special way, we'd like to wish our American listeners a very, very happy Thanksgiving. This week, of course, just a couple of days away. We hope you enjoy your turkey and your stuffing and your cranberry sauce and your mashed potatoes. Most importantly, it's not Thanksgiving without mashed potatoes. You might say turkey. You would be wrong. Well, thank you all for listening. We know that you can spend your time in a lot of different ways, and we're truly thankful that you choose to spend it with us. That's a Thanksgiving thought for you, even though we say that every week or every 2 weeks. Because that's more correct for when we release our show. If you like what we're doing, please leave a review wherever you get fine podcasts. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music is courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration has been given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday, and The Prep Area operating every opposite Tuesday from us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Bye.
Bye.
Apple pie as well. Excellent apple pie is required for a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and our Canadian listeners, you guys already had your Thanksgiving, so...
Yeah, we'll talk to you in like 11 months or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yes. You can celebrate Martin Frobisher's failed attempt to discover the Northwest Passage all you'd like. We have more fun down here. Maybe. For now. All right.
I was trying to think of some slighted jab at Canada, like, how do you like your Toronto Blue Jays losing to the Indians? But then the Indians lost the World Series, so.
They kind of did.
Yeah, I actually haven't been on the show since the Indians lost the World Series. It's been a little bit of a mourning period.
I have been kind of on, like, a news blackout for the last several weeks. For a lot of different reasons, not just election related or really anything specifically related. I have been on a bit of a Facebook blackout. I will only check that from my computer at home now. I will not check it on my phone. The app is gone. I even blocked my browser from visiting it. I just need to cut things out of my life that don't make me happy, right? And there is no value that I get from staring at my Facebook newsfeed ever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's value in participating for the events and keeping in touch with people, and Messenger is still there, but I don't see it. And we survived for a long, long time without news being in your face constantly. So why do we have to have it in our face now when that's just the norm?
I agree with you. I mean, I've gotten so used to it, but I'll admit one of the most freeing feelings is, you know, accidentally leaving my phone at home when I run to the grocery store. Like, wow, I'm not connected. I'm not on the network. I'm free.